welcome to our show today. We have a lot of things to discuss as normal, but one of the things that is super important and interesting this month is Autism Awareness Month. That is, you know, back then, I mean, I've been doing this for so long, when you said the word autism, people had no idea what it was. And now everybody knows what it is. And the fact that RFK Jr. is doing some research, and President Trump is so actively pursuing, I believe, ways in which to find good things for us in the health venue with putting RFK Jr. in there. I think we really need to talk about that today, even though this is typically a show just for dogs and pets. It does tie in very strongly, very closely together because, well, if you think about it, kids with autism, kids on that autism spectrum, typically, not all, but almost all, are very connected to animals, and they have very strong opinions and feelings about animals and even people. And a lot of times, these kids have this, I say, superpower, that they're able to judge animals. They know that animals are pure and kind, most of them, and that they'll kind of gravitate towards individuals, animals, or individual humans who have a different kind of energy. And that's really what I want to talk about today. So Autism Awareness Month, to me, yes, I've dealt with literally thousands of kids on the spectrum and adults. And one of my closest friends is the most famous autism awareness person and autistic person that anybody's probably ever heard of. But the main thing here is, how can you harness that wonderful way that kids with autism and adults with autism or on the spectrum have that many of us who are, you know, neurotypicals do not have? So I want to discuss that a little bit today, even though technically it's not about dogs, it will morph right back into dogs and other animals. So if we think about it, so for Autism Awareness Month, we know that kids on the spectrum tend to connect very well with animals. Doesn't matter what kind, because remember, as long as it doesn't talk back, it's better than humans who always do talk back. So if we say a dog, therapeutic horsemanship, which I actually started in, gosh, I think when I got my first horse sometime there in the, maybe in the 80s, I was always working with kids on the spectrum. But back then, it was, well, it was really, really almost like you didn't want to tell anybody. It was like having, you know, we all have heard stories about, oh, you had an aunt and everyone said she was, you know, she was crazy and, you know, they kept her separated or they put people into institutions. Well, you know, I, in looking back, really believe that a lot of these people were maybe on the autism spectrum or had some sort of similar condition as autism. And what's really important for us to all understand is, you know, we're going to look at it. God doesn't make mistakes, okay? We make mistakes all day long because we're human. But I really believe that every special person that I've ever met, even more so maybe than the ones who are neurotypical, has taught me and taught others something just huge that we could not have learned elsewhere. So after dealing with this for so many years and being a part of the autism and that spectrum community for so long, and even including any kids or adults with special needs, you know, we think about, you know, kids with Down syndrome. They are the happiest, typically the happiest human beings on the planet. And it sets our priorities straight when we see how life really can make you super happy if you're not trying to get the latest, greatest, worried about making tons of money or living in a particular town or fancy house or having things, you know, which things, when we die, we can't take things with us. So we can only take memories of people and memories of what happened in the past. But if we think about it, I think we all can say we have learned so much from kids, especially who are on the spectrum or with special needs, and adults, because their priorities are straight. So one of the things that people always ask me, because they know what I do and who I am, and they say, you know, just wondering, you know, I know that, you know, people have, you know, therapeutic writing, which, I mean, like I said, I started somewhere back in New Jersey in the late 80s, or no, actually before then. Scary how long it is, but long enough. And I can remember seeing kids on one of my horses, kids who'd never spoken before, like not a word. And these kids would suddenly, you know, start echolalia, which means they're kind of repeating whatever you said. But over the course of a little bit of time, I had these kids who never spoke a word would speak when they were on my horses. And, you know, I didn't know how much they spoke at home. And, you know, I would tell the parents, you know, Johnny, you know, was riding today and he was really chatty. We did some of the tasks and skills on the horses and he was riding on the horse and, you know, he started talking to me and they're like, that's impossible. He doesn't talk. And like, you should come to the next session because he does talk. And people were really mesmerized by this, you know, 40, 50 years ago, because, you know, people, I think just the way humans are, they tend to think, oh no, I don't have a quote unquote normal child. But, you know, normal just means common. It doesn't mean good or bad. And honestly, I've met more horrible, quote unquote, normal people in my life than I have special people. The special people, they are just like the best. They speak from the heart. If they don't speak, they act from the heart. And the reason so many kids, especially with autism or on the spectrum or with different, you know, special things that we don't have, the reason a lot of them get so frustrated and act out is because they can't express what they feel with words. A lot of these kids, either they shut down. I've dealt with so many kids who are selective mutes, who just one at 15, one at 17 at a very well-known autism center that I walked in with Wyatt and two kids in blankets. They literally had a blanket over their head, like heavy duty army blanket, like that, olive drab. And when the dog was there, they each asked me if they could walk the dog in different ways, but using words. So I thought, okay, here, sure, yes, you can walk Wyatt. And they did. And they spoke. And everyone around them was like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, he doesn't speak. He's never spoken a word in his life. Animals, I'm not saying I had that ability to do that, but animals have that connection with special needs people the same way they have it with neurotypicals. Think about you come home from a bad day at work, or you even come back from a good day at work. Do you want to talk to somebody? Do you want a human to start blah, 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 and badgering you about what you did? Or do you just want to like chill? I don't know about you. I like to chill and I'm madly in love with my guy. I love when, you know, we talk, but it's when you come back from a stressful day, maybe you just don't want to talk. Maybe you just don't care. You just want to talk, but you don't want to talk to them. You want to talk to your animal because your animal can communicate with you without words. You don't have to hear anything. And it reminds me of a very, very famous episode of an old show, Sex and the City, which was funny because Carrie came home and Aiden was home and she loved him. But he would just always ask, hey, where'd you go? What'd you do? How'd everything go? Blah, blah, blah. And she, after a while, and the whole episode was about this, she finally just said, I love you, but I need 15 minutes or 10 minutes, whatever she said, when I get home from my stressful day to just be, I love you, has nothing to do with you. This is what I need. And what animals allow us to do is that same thing. They come up to us and we pet them. They give us kisses, their tail. I just say the most beautiful thing God ever gave us besides children is a waggling tail of a pet. And they just make us feel so good. And that's why I believe that children and people with, you know, special needs tend to connect so well as a group to animals, because animals give that love, they give that acclaim, the accolades, the just like, I love you so much. Because you got to admit, a golden retriever puppy coming up to you, or a spouse who wants to know everything you did and tell you about all the bad things that happened during his or her day, is not what you need when you had a stressful day. You need the golden puppy. You need fish, even tropical fish. Just, it's something wonderfully relaxing about animals, and it's because they have an unspoken language. And sometimes we just don't want to talk because we just don't care. We need to take our time. We need to enjoy ourselves. And we need, most of all, to just decompress a little bit. So let's talk a little bit here about service dogs, because service dogs can help people. And we get a lot of phone calls at Noble Service Dogs for people wanting service dogs for their kids. And sometimes, and we get it pretty often, I'd say maybe one in 8 or 10 people who applies for a service dog, they also say, well, I have another child who doesn't really need a service dog, but kind of does. So I want to go into that today about how service dogs can help with autism, can help with PTSD, can help with all kinds of other disabilities or all kinds of other conditions. Literally anything you can think of, probably an animal can do a better job than a human can. So how can a service dog help somebody with special needs? All right. Well, first of all, service dogs don't ask, and any dog for that matter, but service dogs specifically, they don't ask what is, what happened to you or whatever. They don't use language. They use their eyes. They use their body posture. They use their little tails. And I tell people, don't focus if you have a dog, because we are going to talk later in the show about this. If you do have a dog, particularly who is wagging its tail, or you see a dog wagging its tail, that doesn't mean that it's happy. Wagging its tail means something completely different. We're going to go into that afterwards. So for right now, though, let's just think about, don't all of us who are listening today, and myself, of course, don't we all have pets because they don't talk? The old joke about lock your wife in the trunk and lock your dog in the trunk and come back in an hour and see who's happy to see you. You know, not that you would ever do either, but it's funny if you want to say that. It's not really funny, but people say that all the time. But that's the thing with animals. Animals are just happy to see us. They don't care if we're the best person in the world or the worst person in the world, because to them, we are the best person in the world. And it's kind of crazy that the megalomaniacs and crazy people, and I use that term with all due respect to people who have issues, but the quote-unquote crazy people, if you think about horrible people, the people who have done terrible things to kids or adults, serial killers, all those, most of them started out by harming animals. And that says something, because anyone who would harm something defenseless, and yes, a dog you can hurt, unfortunately, even if it's a large dog, if you're sick, if you have really serious issues like that, you'll figure out a way to do that. And that's what's really scary. And that's why we have to have stronger laws against animal abusers, because if you'll abuse an animal, you'll abuse a child. If you'll abuse a child, you'll abuse an adult. If you'll abuse an animal, you'll abuse anybody. You don't care. And that's where we have a lot of these criminals, you know, who are, you know, coming in and not that everybody is, not that most are, but there's enough of them. And we had this sudden crime wave. I bet you if you looked back at that, where they are, they probably started out harming animals. I remember a young boy when I was a kid, and I remember when he was, I want to say about 10, 11 years old, and we were up in a very little sleepy, very calm town. I mean, everybody, it's still basically the same neighbors as it was, you know, 50 years ago, or the kids of those neighbors anyway. And I remember this kid taking, and this is going to sound terrible, it's pretty graphic, so if you get grossed out, please, you know, turn it off for a moment. But I remember him taking a baseball bat, and when, and I'm not going to go into the whole thing, and he would, when the squirrels would come and he would see them, he would hide and he would hit them with the baseball bat. And I'm being very kind in that. It's, it was pretty traumatizing for me as a little kid to see this because I was such an animal lover as I am now. Well, I tend to think that he, because I know he was in prison for something, I will tend to think that he probably became an abusive adult. And I will bet you that he probably also did something horrible to somebody. And I saw that. It was only one person I ever saw like that. And it's scary. So anybody who had hurt an animal or a special kiddo or anybody for that matter, there's something wrong with them. They don't need to be walking around here. But we noticed that kids, especially kids with autism, tend to have really amazing connections, unspoken connections with animals. And what's really cool about that is we can use an animal that's specially trained to be able to bring that child out into our world. A lot of times people and the moms and dads and family members of kids with autism will tell me, or with special needs, that their kid has just an amazing connection with their dog or their aunt's dog, or the one was kind of a cool one a few weeks ago. It's a new person who's getting a service dog through Noble Service Dogs. And the aunt has a pit bull who is very grumbly, very growly. It just happens to be a pit. I don't think it's ever bitten anyone, but it's a, you know, a little temperamental, like a woman, you know, who's that time of month temperamental. But this kid, little boy, can do anything to the dog. The dog looks at the little boy with goo-goo eyes, and they can't figure it out. They said, but he's rough with the dog, and he doesn't talk to the dog. The dog just loves him. That's what I'm saying. And I don't think anybody even understands why these kids and adults, special ones, and I say special, it's because they are. They have something we don't have as neurotypicals. We have to listen to these kids and watch them and let the families look at what they are doing and who they are and figure out, like, what do they have that the rest of us don't have? And this little boy, I mean, he could do anything to this pit bull. But if you tried to do the same thing as a neurotypical, dog would be growling at you and snarly and snarky. And so, you know, here's a dog that people, although I love pitties, people, you know, really look at them as being like very dangerous. Here's a dog that growled at people, but this little boy could do anything. So animals see inside of us. And that's maybe why some animals don't like some people, because they can see inside. I know that Bill Murray from, you know, Animal House and SNL when it was good. I remember Bill Murray always had a phrase, something to the effect, I'm paraphrasing, I don't trust people who don't like animals, but I trust my dog when it doesn't like a human, doesn't like a person. In other words, you know, I trust the animal's judgment on the one end, and if you don't like animals, just, you know, you're off. And I do believe that. Fortunately, I get to work with the most amazing people and animals, and some of them are horses. And today we're going to talk about service dogs. So let's go into how a little bit of basic, and then I'm going to have to take a quick break and come back. But how can service dogs actually help special needs people? Well, obvious things like tether, which I, by the way, don't try it on your own, because if you don't have a dog, I've seen too many quote unquote service dogs come out of places that the dogs don't even do anything. They're not even trained. There's a lot of, unfortunately, a lot of people who don't know what they're doing, and you know, they think they know, and that's more dangerous. I'd rather have somebody who tells me they don't know something than somebody who tells me they do but doesn't. So the basics are that these dogs have a lot of power to help whatever it is that we need them with. But what we have to do is make sure that we understand what the difference is on the books, off the books, between a real and a fake service dog. Because there's some things I'm going to go into that if you, once you understand them, you're going to be like, oh, this completely makes sense. And we're going to do that right after the break. And I'll be right back. Stay tuned. And welcome back. We're going to, as promised, go into how to tell a real versus a fake service dog. Now, we all know that, you know, service dogs have to be exceptionally well-trained, well-behaved. But a service dog, there are different levels of service dogs, and this is kind of what I wanted you to understand. So there are different levels of dogs. Now, you might not need, you know, a full-fledged service dog that can go out on an airplane. And, you know, we do real service dogs, like legit, unbelievable, you know, that do everything from tether, mobility, seizure detection. By the way, not every type of seizure is detectable, so it sometimes has to be seizure response. Anybody who tells you that they can absolutely train without going into extreme depth and detail and speaking with the medical team cannot tell you if the dog can tell or not, because the vast majority of dogs cannot tell anyway, because it's usually seizures are usually created by electrical impulses, and the vast majority of dogs cannot perceive that. Sometimes I hear that, this is my dog, and it tells me, you know, my service dog, and it tells me, you know, something, and I'll be like, yeah, and I know that's fake, because it's not something that is perceptible. So it has to be something that can be perceived. So let's say, for instance, a dog who is with somebody who has seizures. Now, I'm not saying that all dogs can't do great things, because most dogs can. Some just don't have what they need for it. One of the things I always kind of get a chuckle out of is when somebody tells me their dog is doing something when it's panting. If you think about it, how good is your sense of smell when your mouth is open and you're panting? You can't smell things. So a dog who is always panting, it could be good for mobility. That'd be fine. It'd be a little shaky for mobility, but could be. But a dog has to be able to smell things. So if it's not using its nose and has its nose clear and all the air going in through into the Jacobson's organ, which is the part that smells it, smells. If the dog is not able to intake the vast majority of its air through its nose, it's not going to be able to smell much of anything, right? So think of that. That's logical. So if you're looking to have a real service dog versus a fake one, and somebody tells you, yeah, this is my, you know, diabetic alert dog, and all the dog does is pant, it's going to be really hard for that dog to do anything unless it actually stops panting. And sometimes the nose dries out while it's panting. So then if the nose is too dry, it also isn't the optimal condition for for a dog who's doing scent detection. So if the dog's, you know, mouth is always open, how is it going to smell? Like, can you smell what's going on really well? Maybe a little, but can you really smell something when you're talking through your mouth? Try doing that. Inhale through your mouth. And unless it's a smell like gasoline, which also has a taste to it, or something really strong, you're not going to really notice it. And these dogs have scent, you know, sense of smell that's anywhere between 400 to multiple thousands of times better than our human ones are. So we want to give the dog, you know, the benefits of having as much possible chance of being able to help us with that. So it's, of course, on mobility dog, it's not going to matter as much, of course, except if they're panting. Sometimes you can feel that through your vest, through your harness. But it is really important for people to understand there's certain things that can be kind of symbolic of fake. Okay, you're walking through the supermarket and somebody comes up to a person with a quote unquote service dog. And usually the people who have fake service dogs have like 42 to 103,719 patches that say everything from, like, you can't deny me access, to go away, I don't want to talk to you, this is my service dog, you're not allowed to Like that, those are not real ones. I don't care. And if you are somebody who has a real service dog and you put more than, you know, service dog, please do not pet, or instructional ones, please do not separate handler from dog, you know, things like that. If you're putting all those on and you have the leash that says service dog and you have tags, it's faking. It's like watching somebody try to get the, like a kid get out of a lie, and they just keep digging themselves in deeper. Please, if you do have a real service dog, and those of you who have fake ones, if you're listening, I'm going to put you on your honor system. Keep all your patches because we love to see them on you. But the real ones, please take all the 42,000 patches off, because we know that. You know, there are things that you can tell. One of them is, like I was saying, if you go into a supermarket and you say, oh, what a pretty dog, can I pet him? And if they say yes, it is not a service dog, because a service dog is not there for your entertainment. It's there to keep someone safe and healthy, to be focused completely on the person, which is why you don't want the person to pet the dog. When I'm somewhere and I've got one of my dogs, especially if I'm hanging on for dear life during a, you know, when I need that dog, and somebody comes up to me and says, I'm going to say, I'm sorry, he's working. And you know what? A lot of people, most people, I'll say, do you understand? They go, oh, yeah. Or most people won't even ask, because they'll say, oh, I see it's a service dog. They'll tell their kids, oh, you see, that's a real service dog. You see how the dog is only paying attention to the lady, even though you, as my little son, are making goo-goo noises at it. You see how the dog is still only paying attention to its owner? That's a real service dog. So when you start going through the checkout line and your dog is up on the counter, or, you know, up on the conveyor belt trying to smell food, or, you know, sticking its nose in other people's baskets and things, that is not a service dog. I don't know what compulsion people have to try to fake it, like to get away with whatever you're getting away with. I don't understand, like you're getting away with something, so you're making it harder for somebody with a real disability. That puts you in a pretty not great light, guys. But if you have a real service dog, you don't want to have that dog focused on anybody else, because let's just say that at that moment, or for that few minutes, that somebody's petting your dog, that's your service dog, and now maybe that dog is going to miss that signal for that seizure, or that blood sugar, that high or low blood sugar episode, or maybe he's going to turn and he's going to knock over somebody who's an amputee, who's holding the dog, who's holding on for dear life to that dog. Maybe he's going to bump somebody with a visual disturbance so that that person steps off the curb and gets hurt. You just can't do that. I remember a good friend of mine had a guide dog, and they tried to push it. It's a very reputable agency, but they tried, because in all their years, they had never had an entire litter. I think it was like five in this litter. It was a very small litter of labs or goldens or mixes, I guess they were. They'd never had a whole litter graduate. So it was a small litter, so it was great time to try. And they all, all the dogs were kind of given out a little too early, in my opinion. I did see the dog. The dog was trying to play with my dog, who ignored it, my service dog, at an event, and the dog kept trying to pick food up off the floor. I knew, because he had had a prior service dog, guide dog, that was really, really good. And this one was just too young. It wasn't that the dog wasn't good, but it wound up, he was walking out on the trail, and the dog must have seen a squirrel or something, all of a sudden pulled him into a ravine. And we thankfully, he's okay, but he literally fell off a cliff. He literally fell down a cliff, and being completely, you know, visually impaired, being blind, he kind of was laying there just calling for help, because he was stuck between trees. I mean, it was horrible. But the reason that happened is, even this really great organization that trains guide dogs, they let the dog go too early because they were so hung up on making sure everyone got out instead of everyone got out well. And we will not do that at Noble Service Dogs. I know that these people who are training these dogs, and the people who are, you know, there for these dogs and doing all the placements and all, and the intensive training, like intensive, it's not easy, because once that dog is trained, somebody has to know how to use it. It's kind of like getting a really fancy sports car with a little bit of a, like the Porsches has a little bit of a balky transmission. So when you go from like second to third sometimes, or third to fourth. It's balky, right? So you have to have practice with that, and you have to be able to drive a stick shift before you go and drive a Porsche stick shift, or you will never be able to do it. It sounds really easy. It's like, oh, you just put this there. Yeah, but there's so many different things. You have to make sure you're not gunning the gas. You're not going to, you know, break your flywheel and, you know, pop teeth off your flywheel. Like, there's so many things you have to do. Well, service dogs, well-trained, legit service dogs, should come with at least a one-year guarantee, so that if somebody has a problem and needs it retrained, or, and I'm not saying that somebody, you know, does everything wrong, but if they're pretty much doing everything right, you know, dogs are dogs. They're not machines. Even machines break down. Cars and boats, and God knows boats do, motorcycles, bicycles, everything breaks down. TVs, you know, furniture breaks down. Here's a living, breathing thing with somebody who really doesn't know how to utilize it. So we really focus on that. I should say Noble Service Dogs focuses big time on that. And the main thing to remember is that you're a part of it. So like I remember a lady many, many years ago who called up and she said, I have a question about service dogs. And I said, okay. She said, well, does the service dog flush the toilet? So I was kind of taken aback because I said, gee, what an odd question. And it was like one of her first questions. So I said to her, I said, well, you mean for someone who's on the commode who can't do it themselves, turn around? You know, like that, for somebody who's maybe, you know, quadriplegic or something. And she goes, no. She goes, after it goes to the bathroom on the toilet, can it flush the toilet itself, or do I have to flush it? Yes, I'm not kidding. I am not kidding. I wish I were. My vivid imagination is nowhere near that vivid. Well, clearly, we did not recommend that this person, who was quite disconnected from the reality of service dogs, would get a service dog. And if they ever did, they would really have to come clean and figure it out and learn more about animals in the first place. So you have that extreme. And then you have the other extreme of people who think that the service dog that you're giving them for their child is going to babysit so that they can go out to the spa and go get their mani-pedis and go do their shopping and come back and the dog is going to have the baby's diaper changed and the whole thing. Now, I'm not saying it's not possible to train a dog to do almost anything, because I've done it. Noble Service Dogs has done it. I've done it with horses. You know, we can do that. Like I joke, you know, can I train a service dog to get a beer out of the refrigerator for your six-year-old? Sure, but why? We want to make sure that, because remember, everything takes time and time takes money, right? So it takes money to pay somebody, one of our top trainers or somebody who's very good at this, even you guys. And even if it's not money, it's opportunity cost of the time. So it costs money by virtue of you're not doing something else that could pay you. Your time is now worth whatever your opportunity cost was. So if we look at it and we say, okay, let's say, how many hours do you think it would take to train a service dog? And people will go, oh, I don't know, maybe like 100. No, maybe for somebody else's quote unquote service dog, you know how many hours it takes us? And also any of the really good agencies, if you ask them how long it takes, how many years it takes, they'll say, oh, we can do it in 3 months. Oh, good. Okay. If you have a dog or horse, horses take way longer, that starts out, we from start to finish will take, and this is people who've done over 1,000 service dogs, will take more than 1,500 to 2,000 hours. Now, some of it's group work, some of it's private, some of it's semi-private, but most of it is in the facility, and then another 25% of it beyond that, or more as needed, is going to be taking the service dogs and training on the road, to the mall, to restaurants, to doctor's appointments, to hospitals, on airplanes, on trains, in 10 different kinds of vehicles, in SUVs, in sedans, and in little cars and in limos everywhere you could imagine. And like I said, on trains, we go on the tram in the airport because that's like a train and they start and stop very quickly. We go on elevators. We don't go on escalators because escalators can be very, very dangerous if the dog's tone, depending on the type of dog. But we had that happen once many, many years ago where somebody accidentally took a dog, a service dog in training, onto an escalator, and the dog's tone was a big labby mix. And the dog's toenail got caught. And yes, the dog's toenail got pulled out on the bottom of the escalator. But thankfully, the whole dog's the paw was okay. It just was, you know, we had to take care of that. But this is what happens. And this was probably 35 years ago. And it was, so actually, it wasn't even our dog, but it was a dog that we were trying to help them. And they just forgot. So we have to train the humans because the people are the ones taking the dogs in. And you can't go into certain places. We've talked about that before. You can't go in. It's crazy. Government buildings. I know. It's bizarre. How can you not go into a government building? Right. Because they make laws that they don't have to follow. But it's also things like churches and synagogues, private places. If they say no, it's no. There is no ADA that says you can go into somebody's house if it's a private home, or to go into a private club that you have to belong to as a member. Or if it's, you know, a church or synagogue, because again, it's considered to be private. But most people will allow, I found, you know, the dogs in there. And also the other thing is I found most of the time when people say, oh, you're not allowed to have that dog in here, or they tell you go, you know, oh, you have to leave. And I'll say, did you have a bad experience? Were you bitten by a dog when you were a kid? Oh, no, I wasn't. Or yes, I was. Most of the time, people get very, very reactive like that with a legit service dog. I'm not talking about your dog is lifting its leg on everything, growling at people and, you know, off leash and walking around running around the restaurant begging food because, yes, I've seen and heard of that plenty of times. Clearly not a real service dog. But most of the time when people are very reactive to having dogs around, it's that they either had parents who didn't like animals and convinced the kids they were allergic or going to get bitten or whatever, or because the person genuinely had a bad experience. And I'll usually say something to the effect of, you know, if they say, no, I just had a bad experience, say, well, this is a legit service dog. If you like, you know, we can try to, you know, help you when, you know, when the dog isn't working, you know, you could visit with it or visit with another dog. That because these are the ones that you want to practice with because these are real service dogs and they guaranteed won't bite you. The problem is too many people think, like I said earlier, that they're going to get one over on people. And I find that really disturbing and disgusting. If you have your dog, do you think your dog really wants to fly on a plane pressurized or not pressurized as much? Do you think your dog really wants to be in that pouch for 5 or 6 hours? You know what they feel? They feel the same thing we do. And when I have my own service dogs, I at one point had 4 service dogs. The reason I had 4 is I did a massive amount of travel. And after a little bit, even a young dog, you know, they get tired. And I don't want to overwork my dog. So we have a couple of people who are very, you know, very active, you know, very important, influential people who have to travel up. They have 2 service dogs from us. Because if you're taking that same dog, you know how you get kind of jet lagged sometimes. Well, same thing happens with the dogs. And you get dehydrated on a plane, even if you drink a lot. And really most people, you know, you have your service dog in vest. You don't really want it to be drinking, or eating or anything, certainly eating. So, you take the vest off, give it a little bit of water, but you don't want that dog to become focused on drinking or eating while it's in vest. So it's, you know, most people I know who do travel do not give their dogs water while they're on. And most people, wrongly, don't give their dog any water before they get on the plane because they don't want them to have to go to the bathroom when they're on the plane. So dogs do get dehydrated a bit on a plane. So if you're going to be doing, you know, 2 or 3, 4, 5 flights in a week, something like that, it really takes a toll on the dog. So if you are one of those people who needs to have your service dog with you all the time and you do a lot of traveling, even any kind of traveling, then, you know, that's something that you should consider having a second one, and you use each one about half the time. So it is really important to think about that dog too. Okay, so let's talk a little bit right after the break. I'm just going to take a quick break about how to train your service dog, how to select your service dog, and also how to fix problems. So we'll be right back in a minute. Stay tuned. This is Good Stuff coming back. And welcome back to the show. As promised, we are going to talk about not just real versus fake service dogs, but levels of dogs and how to select your dog. Now, a lot of times people call and they say, well, we need a service dog, but then I don't really want to take it out with me because I just need it when I come home. So there are different levels of this. We have like a companion dog, which is just your pet. That's okay. If you come home and that's all you need, you just need to like lay with your pet. We have dogs like that. If you need a dog that's going to do particular skills or tasks, that's like a home helper dog, but it's not going to be going out. A lot of times we have these dogs with people who are homebound or kids who are homebound, and that's perfectly fine. Those are dogs. They have all the skills and abilities of the service dog because they have to be task trained, but they're not going to be like out on a lot on airplanes and in cars all the time and things like that. So and in public places. So that's another level. And then we have something of therapy dogs, which are not service dogs, totally different. Those are just your dogs who they're good, sweet, knucklehead dogs. They like people. You bring them into the hospital or to read with kids, whatever. Though that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking actual levels of service dogs. Then we have the whole enchilada, a legitimate service dog. Now, service dogs must be task trained to mitigate a disability. There are only two questions that somebody can ask you if they're going to deny you access. Now, this does not mean that if the lady in aisle 8 looking at the Twinkies asks you a question and goes, oh, what does the dog do for you? Why do you have to have a service dog? You look perfectly normal to me. She is not denying you or allowing you access. So the ADA questions are only two. You must answer them honestly under perjury, a penalty of perjury. If you lie, if you tell somebody this is, yes, I have a disability, basically is what you're saying when I tell you the two questions, and that you're lying about it, that is very similar to if you were committing Medicare fraud or insurance fraud. It is a punishable offense. So think long and hard before you sign that little paperwork, the single page that you need for the TSA, for the ACAA, Air Carrier Access Act. Think long and hard before you say it, okay, because it means something. So let's just say somebody comes up to you who's a manager or whatever and says, excuse me, but is this a service dog required because of disability? Yeah, that's the right thing to ask. Is this a service dog required because of disability? You are going to answer. If you answer yes, you better have a disability. Not that I'm saying that, but I think God watches it more than anybody else. I just want you to know the consequences. Okay, and it is. Yes, it is. They are also permitted and should ask you. The second question is, what tasks or job is the dog trained to perform? If you say, well, I feel better when, oh, that is not a service dog. Okay, the dog must be trained in a task. You do not have to demonstrate the task, but the dog must be trained in a task to mitigate a disability. So someone who's visually impaired, the dog is a guide dog. The dog is helping the person. That's a task. If somebody who's got extreme anxiety or a child with autism or a child or an adult with another condition that would, you know, require a dog to give them deep pressure, the deep pressure therapy. So you could say my dog is trained in deep pressure therapy. If it's a seizure alert dog, you would say the dog is trained to alert to seizures. Now, it kind of stinks because I wish the Department of Justice or somebody in the government, even though I don't love government, would say, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to give you an actual ID card for your dog or something that would be where people don't even have to ask that. But unfortunately, it doesn't exist right now. So any of these IDs you see online, like, oh, look, I have a real service dog. I bought an ID. There was a very cute thing going around, I believe, on social media about, oh, maybe 5 years ago. You could probably even look it up. And I did this also, but with a different one, but I got the idea from this. Whoever did this was brilliant. And this person had an ID card purchased from online, like we see all these things like, oh, I'm going to get my service dog certified. Okay, so people who've never seen your dog tell you, oh, send me $20. I know. Don't they call that scam? Yeah, I think they do. Or $100. Oh, we'll give you a vest to prove your dog is a service dog. No, service dog isn't a service dog because it's wearing a fake vest or real vest showing it's a fake service dog. It's the dog is accepted or not based on if it is task trained to mitigate a disability. So you can buy all the fake things you want. Well, I want the Department of Justice or some government office to have a test that is, I don't care, and this doesn't sound great, but I don't care if you take your fake service dog in and you have seizures and you think that dog is going to, you can take your dog around, and if God forbid you have a seizure and that dog didn't alert to it, that's not my problem. That's your problem. I feel bad for you and I'm sorry, but you should have gotten a real one, a dog that was trained properly. So yeah, you have the dog, but what did it do? It didn't do anything, right? You can't be asked, obviously, like, oh, go have a seizure so I can prove it's a service dog. But there needs to be some kind of accountability. So now the government, especially when you're flying, now we have this great thing where you have to sign off on it. And the best part is they ask for the name of the training organization. I get phone calls from, because we help a lot of different organizations to kind of test out the dogs and teach them how to do a better job of what they are trying to do. So we have phone calls. We might get, I don't know, 4 or 5 a week where somebody calls and wants to verify from one of the, you know, TSA or, you know, based on the ACAA. And they'll call and say, we want to check on such and such a person who says they have a service dog. We will check out whatever number they were assigned. We'll go in there and we'll say, yes, that dog is in fact a service dog. Now, if you go to one of these fake ones, and they're, or anything you see online that just pops up, those are all fake. They're all fake. There is no legitimate agency. And the thing that they ask you is the dog, did you train the dog? They don't ask you, is the dog a service dog? They say, did you task train this service dog? And these fake places, they didn't train them. They didn't even see them, which brings me to the end of that story. This, I think it was a woman, sent in the picture of her service dog, and it was a picture of a jar of Nutella with a service vest on it. Hilarious. So even on the ID, on the real legit ID that you pay $20 for online, on that, the dog's name, it said jar of Nutella. So you tell me, how real are these things? I did one. I put it on a hero sandwich on a sloppy Joe kind of looking thing with a little fake service vest that we made up out of paper, red and white paper. I got that. You can do it. It's funny, but it's really sad because what it's doing is every single time somebody fakes a service dog, and your dog obviously isn't going to be trained and well behaved. So then the next time somebody comes in with a real service dog, they're questioned. And I hate that. Somebody, a mom with a child with autism who's holding onto a dog should not have to be just subjected to people, oh, well, the last service dog, how do I know it's a real service dog? You know, so you're not hurting me, you're hurting children, special needs children, which goes back to the, remember the kid with the squirrels and the baseball bat. Okay. You are harming people who maybe won't go out again with their special needs child because they're already going out very, you know, apprehensive because they know what those looks are that people give them. People look at them. People look at special needs kids who are a little older, not the littles, but, you know, 10, 12, 14, 16, 18, even adults. They don't think, oh, that child has a special, you know, condition or that child has something that I don't see.
But what happens is you're hurting them. You're hurting these families that are, they're just great families. These are like some of my best friends, a lot of my best friends and really close acquaintances and friends are people who've gotten service dogs from one of the organizations we deal with. And I know at Noble Service Dogs, there's a massive amount of training, 1,500 to 2,000 hours of training. Plus, after that, they're like for a lifetime. Like, you have a problem, they're there. Pretty amazing, you know? And that's really what everybody should kind of focus on. So I want to work with a little bit one thing, and how to get training help and how to select a service dog in training for you. So you can go online and do a contact form on Noble, it's N-O-B-L-E, service, S-E-R-V-I-C-E, dogs, D-O-G-S, .org. And you can go online to nobleservicedogs.org, and you can put in a request on there just asking for help if you want to train your own dog. But it's not just every dog can be trained. It's like saying every kid can play basketball or be Michaela Schifrin and, you know, slide down a mountain on these little, you know, mat sticks and make it look easy, you know. There's probably only about 1 in 10 dogs can become a therapy dog, okay? 1 in maybe 100, if that, can be a service dog if it's trained by the proper person. So chance, if you have a dog already and you get lucky enough, great. Then you contact Noble Service Dogs. But also, you guys have, you know, had maybe what, a couple dogs. I've had dogs my whole life. Okay, you've had 4 dogs. Okay. We have, you know, 60, 80 dogs at any given point, and this is for, you know, forever, right? So we have dealt with tens of thousands of dogs. So we're going to be really honest and say, hey, you know, yes, your dog has what it takes, or no, your dog doesn't. And if you haven't gotten a dog yet, don't get one and say, I'm going to get a puppy because the breeder of the Cavadoodle, you know, Cockapoodle-Doos, they say that a lot of their dogs have become service dogs. Well, you know, I don't believe that. But that's, people don't even understand the difference between a therapy dog and a service dog, let alone what it takes to train or who's training. To get into a really legit program and, you know, best thing to do is just, you know, meet with the people. They should not be charging you for evaluations if they're doing it the right way. They should probably be a nonprofit, but they should be somebody who is going to stand behind their animals. If you actually can work with somebody like that, then that's great. It's not just what the tasks they're going to do and not just being out in public, but there's physical things too. They've got to be able to, you know, have good conformation. Their bodies have to be built right. They have to be the right size. They have to be the right temperament. There's a million things that they need to have in order to have what they need to become a service dog. So it's not just that even their trainability, their tractability, it's physically, and they have to be the right size. If you need a mobility dog, you can't use a schnauzer, giant schnauzer maybe, but not a standard, a mini schnauzer. You know, so this is something that I want people to reach out, and you can go on to nobleservicedogs.org and fill out I guess it's like a request for information, and somebody from there will call you or will get back to you and let you know. And where you can get training help also is the same thing as Noble Service Dogs. Now, I'm not saying that's the only organization, because there are other good organizations, but I know that they do a lot of training for different organizations. I think there's 4 or 5 that come to them. So go to them if you have any questions. And if you need behavioral help, tune in next week, because next week we're going to be talking about how to train a dog with issues and what does a wagging tail really mean. Well, unfortunately, we're done for today. Hope everybody has a wonderful Easter, Passover, whatever your holiday is. God bless all of you. Please be kind to others. And remember that we are all in this together. Let's be friends. Let's be cooperative. And let's be healthy and safe. Till next week, have a great holiday. Bye-bye.